This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Everything's good. I'm now sitting back in my normal chair. And I'll tell you what, I kind of miss this chair. Got my Emmy.
Stop.
Got my Deacon top hat. Life is good.
Stop.
And
just stop.
So there it is. Got delivered over the weekend. Finally, it's made its way back from it's made its way back from the front row at the Bay, watching my beloved Giants. My boys sent it to me finally, and it's now sitting there, the cutout, keeping the seat warm. Life is good, right there. How about
great.
That?
Eric McClain joins us from Myrtle Beach. Matt, can't you just see that sitting in his front yard? By the way, are you in a suite?
Yes.
Look at that. Is that the – look, he's pulled a Mark Richt on us. He's got the ocean in the background. He's got – what in the world?
I finally know what it feels like to be EJ Manuel, Mark Richt, and to just look out and see the ocean. And it's a pretty nice life, guys. Now, this isn't Miami. This isn't Destin, Florida. It's dirty Myrtle, but it does just fine.
I notice that's a corner room too, by the way. That's not one of those, I'm stuck in the middle of the hallway.
What?
You got the corner penthouse suite, probably at the third floor.
Hey, look, I said I know Mark Packer and Wes Durham, and they said, oh, sir, we'll take care of everything. Don't worry about anything.
No.
We got you.
No. Turn the cards over. Some swanky Clemson alum owns the hotel. That's what you're getting ready to tell us next.
There you go.
You know, the only people that stay in rooms like that are named like Servassier. That's all I'm going to tell you right there. You come over here as Servassier. All right, let's get to business here. Football on the brain. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six consecutive ACC championships for Dabo Swinney. Mac, you've been a part of all this stuff. You were there at the ground floor. What the Tigers did Saturday was pretty impressive. They made a really good football team look ordinary in Notre Dame.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And you know, it was interesting enough, kind of have an idea that could happen. That when you saw this team, that they were healthy and they got all their guys back. And I know so many people were frustrated, and maybe even some folks on the Notre Dame team and staff were maybe even tired of hearing about the fact that Clemson didn't have these people, and that, you know, it wasn't going to matter that much because they were showing up. Notre Dame was showing up. Well, it mattered, and Clemson healthy is a whole different animal, and honestly, I think the best team in the country when you look at who they have personnel-wise, what they can do from you offensively. And defensively, just throw so many things at you, you don't even know what you're looking at. I mean, that still was, you know, the best offensive line in the country, in my opinion, at Notre Dame. And they gave up 6 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. And honestly, it probably should have been more, but Ian Book is that elusive and that creative that he was able to escape. But a great performance by Trevor Lawrence reminded us that he's the best player in the country, what he was able to do with his legs, how much that was a factor. You know, if it wasn't me, it was other people on this network, you know, just telling everybody that was going to be a huge difference maker. That was going to open up so many other things and just really alleviate stress on everybody from the offensive line. Because when you look at the linebackers, they weren't able to just trigger downhill like they could game one. The safeties weren't able to just shoot down in the gaps like they were in game one because of Trevor's run threat, because of the RPO threat and his ability to see past that and not just be forced, to be stuck with one option if he decides to go with it. So I think all of that really helped. The offensive line looked tremendous. Travis Etienne got going. I talked about he needed, 150 yards for these guys to win, and he was right near close to it. So really just a tremendous performance by the Tigers.
Eric, did you sense, though, the 24 that was the surprise in this, right? Not that Clemson won the game, because we thought Clemson was certainly capable. Thought it would be a lot closer than the 24 points. I told Pack early in the first hour, I thought when Notre Dame led 3-0, that was fine. But when they settled for the field goal that ultimately was not converted,
yep,
and did not make it 10-0, that was almost deflating to Notre Dame and the piece of momentum maybe that Clemson needed.
Yeah, you know, it was actually interesting. On our podcast on Friday, you know, I spoke about how I would not be shocked if this turned into a blowout. When you have a coach like Brent Venables, who's the best defensive coordinator in the country, when you give him 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent after he's already played the opponent, he's going to know each and everything that they do. He's going to have answers. And you look at him in bowl games, treat this ACC championship kind of like a bowl game because of all the extra prep time. He's going to dial it up, and he's going to have answers and present you with problems that you don't have the answer to. And it was actually really interesting. Jordan Cornette brought this up Saturday night after the game. He said Notre Dame was preparing for a Clemson team almost that they hadn't even seen because of those guys being back, because of the quarterback that was there with Trevor Lawrence. So I thought that that was a really interesting point. Clemson kind of knew who they were going against and what the beast that Notre Dame was. Notre Dame had no clue what was coming to Charlotte.
You weren't too hard on Cornette, were you? Because let's be honest.
No, I actually was pretty nice to him.
Because he thoroughly enjoyed November 7th. He would remind you about November the 7th. I wondered what the back and forth was going to be after Saturday with you two.
Well, look, this is what happened. After a year ago, you know, we played the ACC championship, and then I lost my host. I didn't want to lose another host after the ACC championship, so I wanted him to stick around, so I couldn't be too mean to him.
Okay. From one Notre Dame guy to another, right? That's what you're basically saying. From one Indy guy to another.
It's a little interesting, right?
All right. Let's talk about now a big picture for both ACC teams in the college football playoff. They're both kind of in different spots, though, aren't they? I mean, I just talked about this last hour about Notre Dame. Brian Kelly's done great job at Notre Dame. Great job. But there's a but to it, though, right? The but part is Notre Dame wants to be elite. They want to be looked upon like you talk about Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State. To do that, though, you have to win these games when they matter the most. And if you look at the body of work for the Irish in these big moments, 0-4 in the BCS, got outscored by 101 points, haven't won a major bowl bid, haven't won a major bowl game since 94. Haven't won a national championship since 88. 2-19 this century versus top five teams. Another moment like Saturday where, hey, this is your time. You are a senior dominated team, and then you get dominated. Now you got 2 weeks to get ready for Alabama. It does seem like this is an important crossroad time for an incredibly proud, tradition-rich program that needs to win one of these games when it matters the most.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Pac. And if not win, you know, be very competitive. You know, make it look like, you know, November 7th if you're on the losing end, and make it close. Because, like you said, there's this rhetoric, there's this history where even leading up to that November 7th game, that's all we could talk about is when the big games come to town, when it matters the most, Notre Dame doesn't show up. So we have to change that. You know, I thought that we did when they played Clemson that first time. I mentioned all the guys that were not available. This Alabama team is obviously very good. Number one in the country. A very explosive offense that has a ton of different things that they can throw at you. Very similar to Clemson. And when you see just Notre Dame when they get in these big games, as it has on the screen here, they just can't win them. So I think you're absolutely right. There is another step that Notre Dame can take, that they have to take, you know, to earn that respect. And, you know, maybe it's not necessarily winning national championships. That's a very tough thing to do. But at least winning these big games, winning the playoffs, winning the BCS, winning the New Year's Six type bowls, in this case it's going to be a playoff, you've got to put your best foot forward and just look like you belong. Because I think that's the biggest thing, is when they get in these games, it's just – one team looks drastically different than the other.
Eric, in your mind, you know, watching this league unfold and now, you know, placing it nationally, the committee get it right, putting Notre Dame in at 4? Seemed to me it was the obvious choice, just given kind of the landscape around it.
I think so. I think when you look at their resume, you know, one of the best in the country, the fourth best in the country in this instance, I think they have two of the best wins over anybody. You look at obviously beating a number one Clemson and then beating a ranked UNC team. And the way that they beat that UNC team in the second half, just shutting them down. The same UNC team we just saw score 62 points and break every rushing record known to man against Miami. And so they were able to take all of that away. So I think when you look at all of that, obviously I know they just lost 24 points in an ACC championship game to Clemson. It was down to them and A&M, it seemed like. So do you want the team that got blown out by 30 to number one? Do you want the team that got blown out by 24 to number three? You know, it was kind of picking and choosing. And when you look at total team, when you look at resume, I think Notre Dame was almost by far, you know, the better team when it comes to Texas A&M and Notre Dame.
I thought it was a total no-brainer. There was a lot of spin going on. Yeah. And it started, to be honest with you, it started at halftime of the ACC championship game where all of a sudden,
everybody's tweeting stuff out, right? It was amazing.
Well, it was tweets, it was announcers, and all of a sudden, here's Notre Dame getting waxed and like, oh, let's drag Notre Dame down and put A&M in. And I was like, hey, guys, you got to let all this stuff play out, number one. I thought it was a no-brainer that Notre Dame was the number four spot. I mean, hey, both of these teams, when you make the comparison between Notre Dame and A&M, and no knock on Jimbo, he's doing a nice job, he's getting paid a ton of money, good for him, and he's trying to change the culture, then he's getting it. I like the direction they're headed in, and they're going to see the Tar Heels at the Orange Bowl, which will be a fun game. But when you compare these two, this was an easy call. They both have an ugly mark, right? Notre Dame got blown out by Clemson, A&M got blown out by Alabama. That's a wash. Now you go to quality wins. Hey, A&M beat a three-loss Florida team. Terrific win, because Florida's a good team. But you know what? Notre Dame beat Clemson. Not even close to make those two comparisons. A&M's next best win, I'm assuming, is Auburn. And they had to rally to beat those guys, a team that lost to South Carolina.
Right.
Come on. Notre Dame's best win was on the road against a team in the top 15 in North Carolina. This wasn't even a hard debate. But yet the Spin Masters Saturday and Sunday on a number of network platforms was almost nauseating. It's like, hey, somebody do some work. I mean, no disrespect. Texas A&M had more wins against teams that fired their coaches than they had wins with teams over 500. Now, you could go – somebody could have looked that up. Somebody could have looked that up as opposed to going – hey, let's tear Notre Dame down, as opposed to doing your homework and comparing resumes. This was a no-brainer that Notre Dame's in front of A&M. No knock on A&M. Got a really nice team. You've earned the right to be the Orange Bowl, but you are not a college football playoff team, period. Maybe next year.
Yeah, and are you guys – are y'all in the boat of you know, expanding this thing, expanding the playoff out, or do you think it's kind of – right where it is? Because I think we need more teams in. I'd love to see everybody get a fair shot at it, get all five, you know, conference champions in there, get a G5 in there. What boat are you guys in with that?
Eric, I don't have an issue with expansion. I just have – it's going to be part and parcel of whatever that model. Pac said this last week, and it's actually the best way to describe it, and it's part of the reason I think we're both, you know, excited to see Jim Phillips take office too, because – he's kind of been sitting on the front line a little bit with the Big Ten and some of this movement. But now the new landscape of college athletics behind the pandemic, behind the financials, behind all the other things that are taking shape, I think will include an expanded college football playoff. But how that process works is going to be all part of that bigger picture, if you will. Look, I think you can get to eight. But I don't think you can walk it back. Pac will tell you, the financials involved in what we went to from BCS to CFP were so significant that in some ways they have to make sure they take care of their commitment lines on those areas too. I mean, you know, Pac, we know it went from $186 million to $475 million in rights fees alone when they went BCS to CFP. I mean, I can say that they went 2-4, and you see that we went from drinking dime store coffee to Starbucks. Well, now you expand that playoff field. What's that going to look like? And Mark, what do you always say? Nothing gets done till something gets sold, right?
The answer to the answer to your question, Eric, is simple. When the rights holder, and we work for them, decides, hey, I think there's a business opportunity where everybody can make more money. There will be presented that, hey, we could go from 4 to 6 or 4 to 8 or 4 to whatever the number is. And if you can guarantee the president, say, hey, you're going to be able to make more money if we do the following, then that can happen. Now, I will also say one other thing. And I this will be for the in fact, this is going to be some off-campus news because this is going to be for the afternoon radio show. Bama, Ohio State, and Clemson, the three big boys, right? And they're back in the dance again. Those three have accounted for 16 of the 28 total college football playoff games. That includes this upcoming couple weeks. So that means we've had, this is 7 years of the dance, four teams every year, math for West, 7 times 4 is 28. So 28 potential spots. Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State have occupied 16 of the 28 spots in 7 years. They have won, those three have won 14 of the 18 games played. Let that marinate a second. 14 of the 18 games in the playoff during this 6 year period have been won by those three teams, and 5 of the 6 national championships. Now, if you think that's healthy for the sport, hey, it's great for Clemson. It's great for Bama. It's great for Ohio State. But college football is bigger than those three. And you know what? Those three have earned the right to say, we are some bad, bad dudes. And if you want to come get it, come get it. If you're bad, you know, they've earned it.
All right.
But they're not going to put it in neutral and wait for everybody to catch up. So, you know, that is the predicament that we find ourselves in college football.
Eric, here's the other thing, too, and you're uniquely qualified to speak to this, okay? Because you played it at the highest level, and you also love college basketball, right? You are an avid college basketball fan, right? No doubt. So here's my question. All the people who want an expansion piece in the in this deal envision a little bit of that Cinderella from the NCAA tournament. Well, that's fine, but you take your NCAA football experience at the highest level and you tell me what the chances are of Cinderella getting to the last game.
Yeah, it's different in football, right? It's not, you know, this magical team on the hardwood that when you have a clear advantage or disadvantage at the lines of scrimmage, because I think that's where you see the biggest discrepancies in, you know, Power 5, G5, FCS, D2, basketball, you know, there's dudes everywhere. Football, when you start getting to those lower tiers, sure, the speed guys are great skill positions, that there can be a couple of really shining lights, but the biggest difference is the line of scrimmages, the offense and defensive lines, and it's just tough to look at. You know, it's hard to imagine a team going against a Clemson or an Alabama that is going to be so much bigger, so much stronger, faster than that, you know, lower G5 or someone else random coming to have that Cinderella story. Is there a possibility? Sure, that ball isn't round. It bounces weird ways and strange things can happen. But like you said, the likelihood of it not being a blowout when that team eventually gets there is probably pretty small.
And look, I'll wrap on this. We'll go to break and come back. Eric's got accounting, but I would say this. Jamie Chadwell's done a phenomenal job at Coastal Carolina. Luke Fickell's done a phenomenal job at Cincinnati. I mean, they're great stories in this particular year of college football. You know, but to say that Coastal Carolina needs to line up as one of the four or Coastal Carolina needs to play A&M, that's big game hunting, I mean, for those teams.
Right.
Cincinnati, maybe so. I buy into Cincinnati a little bit more than I would buy into Coastal Carolina. But, that landscape of G5, Power 5 has got to be addressed in the new world of college football whenever we get a renovation of the landscape pack. Maybe that's our better term.
No doubt.
Of what we currently work
I like
for.
That. I like a little renovation. Come on.
I know we got to go to break, but no disrespect. All that sounds great, but the group of five agreed to this contract, all right? And they agreed because they were going to get a bone thrown their way to go to a New Year's Day 6 that otherwise they would never have sniffed. They never thought that there would be a potential factor in the Final Four. This thing is not designed for them to be in the Final Four. So, hey, they agreed to the deal. So, right. I, you know, hey, you agree to deals, man. So you got to be held accountable. That's all I'm going to tell you.
That's right.
When we come back, Eric McLean from his swank suite on the Grand Strand on the 61st floor will continue to join us. He offers the very final edition of accounting, by the way. And also, we have wide receiver U and a declared winner. And you knew it, and we knew it. Back after this on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Eric McLean with his traditional Monday appearance. He's got a bowl game down there in beautiful Myrtle Beach.
Sweet.
Before we get to other topics, it was a no-brainer on wide receiver U. And if you watch the ACC championship game, the second you saw the reception, everybody's phones exploded. You just went, done. Tap out. This thing's over.
No need to move on.
E.J. Williams with the one-handed grab wins this week's wide receiver U. And as soon as you saw the play, you knew it. Forget it. Good night.
Yeah.
I'll be here all week. What do I get for the trophy here? Yep. Look at that play.
Yep.
What a snag. Golly.
Defense is right.
Can I say that, EMAC, I'm going to go ahead and step over the line here and say it's not Andrew Booth. And there have been some others, but it might be top 10.
Yeah, that's impressive, man. I mean, to reach back like that, the concentration in a big moment. And I think the funniest thing about that entire thing, we didn't really see it there on the clip, but after the play, they did an ISO on Trevor, and he's just like staring and shaking his head like, how the heck did he just catch that ball? And Trevor was as shocked as all of we were. It was pretty funny.
And you know what's scary? Yeah. You know what was scary about all of that? And the only thing that popped in my head was, man, this is a team that lost Justin Ross, no Ngata, no Latson. So who steps up? We've been asking about it all year, and it's just dude after dude after dude. And got news for you. E.J. Williams is going to be around for a couple more years. This guy is going to be a big-time player for Clemson moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, can you guys think of how just – difficult that is and how, for lack of a better word, just crazy. I mean, if you guys would have told me that Clemson would be out with no Ross, no Ngata, no Latson for the entire year, I mean, would we have said ACC champs? Would we have said 10-1, number two in the playoff? I don't know if we would have at that time. If you would have told us that August 1 that Clemson would have to play pretty much the entire year without those guys, That's an incredible feat, and it just speaks to the leadership, to guys stepping up during their time. I know we got other things to talk about, but, I mean, to see a guy like Cornell Powell bide his time, and in a world where everybody transfers, everybody leaves and goes on to the next best opportunity, it's really cool to see somebody like him take advantage of the opportunity that he's gotten to just work his tail off every day and to now be, I mean, a bona fide superstar with Clemson a wide receiver.
All right, you ready, Pac? Mac offers accounting.
Piece of cake.
The easiest one. Cake. Come on, let's get right to it. Piece of cake, man. Getting the Tigers back at number one. Those fans, man, they were a little upset about being number two. Every week that I posted these on Twitter, they said, our time's coming. Our time's coming. We're going to be back to number one. So order restored. If you're a Clemson Tiger fan, the Tigers back at number one. I didn't even change anything else, guys. No, but nobody else played, so there was no reason to move anything. So this is how they finished. I was looking at my preseason power rankings, and man, there's a couple of really big glaring differences. But hey, this is where everybody kind of ended up.
You know, at the end of the day, though, Clemson Notre Dame, we all thought was going to be 1-2, and that's exactly what it ended at the top.
Yeah, no change there. All right, Mac, before we send you off to the Mean Green and the Mountaineers at 2:30 today on the big network, I will offer this. We've talked about Notre Dame. We've talked about Clemson. North Carolina goes to their since 1950 to play A&M in the Capital One Orange Bowl on the 2nd. What is your expectation of the Tar Heels and the Aggies? Because I got to be honest, Carolina slings it around enough, they could be a potential problem for A&M.
A really good defense, especially run defense. Those guys can shut it down. So you look at that, and is North Carolina's scheme, is North Carolina's running backs going to be able to trump that? Are they going to be able to say, nah, we're a better offense? Because I think if it becomes a track meet, I'm not sure if Texas A&M can keep up. You know, I was watching all the different shows that we had on ESPN yesterday and listening to a bunch of different people, and for some reason, there's this stigma out there that Texas A&M is an explosive offense, and that's just not really true. I mean, when you watch their recent games, when you look at them really throughout the season outside of two games, I mean, it is a very slow-paced, you know, methodical offense that can't really score a lot of points if it needs to. So I'm not sure if it becomes a track meet, can Texas A&M keep up? Now, again, certainly they have an elite defense that is really going to cause some problems for North Carolina, but I've got to think that those guys have so many answers on the edge and in the running game, on top of having one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Certainly next year, you know, we're going to be talking all about.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Pack. We got so close.
Oh, I'm glitching out. Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. Oh, Dirty we got Myrtle so strikes, close out of brother. The suite. We got so close out of the swanky suite,
you know,
on the 61st floor on the Grand Strand.
All of a sudden, McLean's got the camouflaged face to go with the camouflaged ESPN sweatshirt.
Oh, look at that! It's still there. Yeah. Oh, man.
You look like you're getting ready to co-star in Predator. So you got that going for you.
But
we'll be watching though later today.
I have a great call. Courtney Lyle, Ryan guys. McGee, Marty Smith, it. Eric McLean, Myrtle Beach Bowl, 2:30 on ESPN, North Texas and Appalachian State. Yeah, yeah, definitely starring in the remake of Predator.
Appreciate
By the
y'all.
Way, don't take the ice bucket
Thank
out
you
of the
very
suite.
Much.
Leave the ice bucket. Don't take the soaps. Don't steal stuff, please, out of the room. When we come back, we got more to go. Great to have Eric with us. We will talk about hoops coming up, and we got hoops coming up today. Right here on ACC Network, you'll get Clemson and Morehead State coming up. But tonight, after Longwood, the Lancers, the Fighting Brian Kersey's, play Virginia Tech. Following that, all ACC, a complete breakdown of the night's games with coach and player interviews, 10 o'clock Eastern, right here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. When we come back, hoops. Do we need to have a talk, Pack? It's not Christmas yet. Do we need to have a talk? Maybe. Back after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. A lot to cover. Dabo Swinney coming up here at the top of the hour. We look forward to that as well. 844 Say ACCN is the number. Big football weekend. Clemson, the ACC champs. 6 ACC teams going to bowls. North Carolina rolling into the Orange Bowl for the first time since 1950. They're going to a major bowl. Never been to the Orange Bowl. So there's some great storylines. We'll get into all that stuff later on as well. But basketball is on the brain too, Wes. And it was not the best of times this weekend because teams that we thought had said, hey, all right, we're going to take it to another level, kind of gave you some performances over the weekend that made you scratch your head and go, what's going on here? And it starts with the team that, quite frankly, I said last week was the safest bet right now in the ACC. And that was Florida State. And Leonard Hamilton, after a pretty good week as far as knocking off Indiana and beating Florida, and you're thinking, all right, we've got the holidays coming up. Florida State's looking like the Noles. Man alive. It was one of those deals on Saturday. You're going, what is this score all about?
And then all of a sudden, you know, Johnny Dawkins takes the Knights in there, and look what happened, right?
Yep.
UCF made it look easy. And I mean deep threes. 27-game win streak at home. Snap, that was the eighth longest in ACC history. You know, one of the longer streaks in Division I. And now all of a sudden, you know, Florida State sees it go by the boards. Now, picked up a conference win over Georgia Tech, probably feeling pretty good. And then all of a sudden, you know, what happens? So that's why I said earlier, I'm not sure there's a lot of clarity. Now, North Carolina, you mentioned, kind of followed the same script. Tar Heels slow start, but then all of a sudden rallied back, end up beating Kentucky. Carolina wins 75-63. Kerwin Walton off the bench, a big factor for Coach Williams' team, who's in Raleigh tomorrow night to see NC State.
Yeah, you got that game tomorrow night, which will be a good one. Again, anytime NC State, North Carolina get together, it'll be rocking. You and Jordan Cornette. You got, by the way, you guys going to have Dave Dorn at the half? Huh? Just asking. But, yeah, that'll be great tomorrow night. But this was a good win for North Carolina. Again, slow starts, but what I like about what I've seen out of the Heels is they have fought back. Yeah, I think, you know, especially after last year, which was, again, rearview mirror, but Roy Williams has got to like the fight in his team. He saw it at Iowa, and again, the Hawkeyes are awfully good, and you saw it against Kentucky, going 33-15 to close out the game, win by double digits. That was a good sign of life there for the UNC Tar Heels.
A couple of sidebar notes here. Virginia is back to activities after a pause, right? And they have added Gonzaga for Saturday in Fort Worth, Texas, to the schedule pack?
Well, I don't know if you saw that. I watched some of the Zags in Iowa. Again, two really good teams.
Wow.
Gonzaga is fantastic. I would go as far to say the Zags and Baylor, to me, are the two most impressive teams that I've seen. Those two teams look like it's already March. So, it's cool that Virginia is jumping in the deep end of the pool to play the Zags. But I'm going to tell you right now, man, that team is really talented. And Virginia's got some work to do. Tony Bennett be the first one to tell you after the loss to San Francisco, the scare, the game you did with Kent State. Again, we still don't really know a whole lot about Virginia, given the pause and the slow start. So we'll see what the Hoos do.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the storylines, by the way, as we turn the calendar to 2021, Mark, is because of the truncated way basketball's gone so far, I'm just not sure how much we're going to really know until maybe mid-January. And I know that sounds absolutely crazy to say, but, I mean, we've seen pieces here and there. We saw Virginia Tech lose to Penn State, come back and get a nice home win against Clemson. You've seen the Tigers get some really good wins. We see Carolina kind of slow started a couple times, come back, win now, beating North Carolina Central, and then certainly over the weekend against Kentucky. I just don't have a sense, and maybe that's where basketball is going to be similar to football. Remember, it took a few weeks before we kind of knew what we thought we had with some of the non-brand names in football, right?
Yep.
And now it may take even brand names to about mid-January to sort it out in basketball. Virginia, Wake Forest, by the way. We haven't seen Wake Forest in, I want to say, almost 3 weeks, Pac.
Yeah. But that game you have tomorrow night, NC State, North Carolina, will tell us something, because NC State need to step up their game in terms of non-conference opponents. They did that last week against a really good St. Louis team, who, by the way, got knocked off this week. So, you know, NC State learned a lot from that game. So, really fascinating to watch your boys tomorrow. I mean, you and Jordan got the game tomorrow with NC State, North Carolina. Yeah. That'll be a good one.
I think it will be very interesting, and it obviously follows Syracuse, Notre Dame on our ACC Network doubleheader tomorrow night. Thoughts are with Jeff Capel. He tested positive for the coronavirus. He's in isolation. Will not be with his team as they open conference play against Louisville as well tomorrow night. Panthers head coach announced on Saturday. So you guess 10 days, 2 weeks here. You know, on the other side of Christmas, maybe perhaps when conference play starts the 1st of January, we'll see Jeff Capel back with the Panthers. Got a good staff, though. Tim O'Toole, his brother Jason, also on that staff, Mylon Brown as well. So Pittsburgh will be in good hands with those guys as they meet Louisville. And by the way, the Cards have got to hope they play better than what we saw Saturday against Wisconsin. Pack. Now, again, here's a team coming out of the pause, right? I mean, what did we expect?
Well, I'm going to go back to Pitt a second. You know, they kind of sneaky, you know, got off to this ugly start. They've kind of put together some W's here. And they've kind of been flying underneath the radar a little bit. And, you know, Coach Capel, when he was on with us a couple weeks ago, was talking about how tough this has been for his team and for all of college basketball and all these student athletes, just the mental grind. And when I heard the news that he'd contacted COVID, I kind of harked back to our interview with him about how difficult this has been. But he'll get through it. But their basketball team is playing well. And you mentioned Louisville with that game coming up. The Cards are certainly, I mean, I turned that game on Saturday, like I told you. And when you realize that, hey, Karlik's not going to go, and you're like, all right, we know about the Williams injury. So what do you have? So you are walking in to no man's land, really, not only shorthanded. I'm not coming up with any excuses here because Wisconsin took them to the woodshed from the get-go. And like I said, I turned it off at 80-38. But when you start talking about losses, Louisville hasn't suffered a loss that bad since February the 13th, 1956. All right? Write that one down. February 13th, 1956. More black and white photos. Wisconsin's awfully good. The Big Ten's awfully good. Louisville's better than that, though. But when they get healthy, they'll be just fine. But that was not pretty Saturday.
Sidebar, I like the Wisconsin jerseys.
Did
old
you?
Old school.
That was definitely old school. They're a good club. That league, like, you know, listen, we're transparent. We're going to tell you like it is. The Big Ten in basketball is loaded. And you saw, like, last night, Northwestern, Jim Phillips, who joined us last week, the new ACC commissioner. Their football team almost pulled off a shocker to win their conference against Ohio State, where their basketball team last night knocked off top five Michigan State. First time I think they beat a top five team since Magic Johnson in 1979. So that league is deep and loaded. So, again, the Louisville, it was not pretty, but the other team's better. A lot better.
All right. Quick check of the ladies' card. We had conference action in the ACC. Number 4 NC State, a 31-point winner at home behind Alyssa Cunanes.
Westmore.
18-7. That's strong enough for you. How about Syracuse? 13-point winner at Boston College. Camilla Cardoza, 24 points to lead the Orange. North Carolina beats Wake Forest. Janelle Bailey, 19-12 for Courtney Banghart's team. Florida State, a winner at Pittsburgh, 67-53. And Clemson rides 17 from Gabby Elliott to win at home against Notre Dame, 78-55. So there's a quick check of the ladies' card in ACC basketball as well. Pac has mentioned it. We got a doubleheader for you tomorrow night. We'll start at 7 o'clock. Presented by Geico, Syracuse hosts Notre Dame at the Dome. I had the Orange Saturday night. Needed overtime. The Fighting Josh Macri's did to bump Buffalo. And then number 22, North Carolina, is at PNC Arena in Raleigh. State Carolina before Christmas. What in the world are we doing, Pac? ACC basketball right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, a full look at the ACC bowl schedule. The Deeks are going bowling. Tar Heels are headed to South Florida. Miami's in a little Cheez-It. And NC State is going to Jacksonville. Back after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, ACC Network, 844-SAY-ACCN. Some guy by the name of Dabo Swinney going to be joining us coming up here at the top of the hour. You look forward to that. Six straight now for the Tigers. Pretty impressive. Back in the college football playoff for the sixth consecutive year. Nobody's ever done that before, ever, since Dirt.
Am I correct you did not go to the game? Is that right?
Yes, I was home. I told you I had a fire. I had bourbon, I had dogs, and I had TVs. I had football, I had basketball, and I was a comfortable. In fact, I even had the president of Clemson University sent me a text. Are you coming to the game? I'd like to get up with you. I said, my butt's right here on the couch. I got a single ice cube. I got a single ice cube. I got a remote control. I got TVs. I got computers. I got notes. I got dogs. House was to myself. Life was good, man. I was the king. So that was my deal. But we got folks
going.
All that's
changed today, though, hadn't it?
Changes today.
All that's changed today.
Hyper Piper's here. Gigi's home. Emmy's home. Hyper Piper, 10-month-old golden retriever, now 77 pounds. And so if you hear Chester and Fuller barking, they hear Piper upstairs wanting to come down here and play in the basement with us. So you may get a Piper shot before the holidays.
Yeah, why don't we let Piper come down and hang out in the basement like the final segment on Wednesday before we go to our holiday break?
Maybe. You may see Hyper Piper before we get ready for the holidays. But nevertheless, we got to go bowling though, Wes. We got to go bowling in the ACC.
20th consecutive year, the Atlantic Coast Conference has six teams at least going to postseason play. Two, of course, in the college football playoff with Clemson and Notre Dame. Throw in North Carolina's contest with Texas A&M as part of the New Year's Six. That's three for the ACC. Good to see that. Pack, I call your attention for the battle for the bowl of Cheez-Its crackers. December 29th, Miami and Oklahoma State. I'm going to tell you now, that right there could be spicy. Well, I don't know if Cheez-It makes a spicy brand of cracker, but that could be spicy.
First of all, the semifinals are a given, right? I mean, that's big boy football. I'm curious with North Carolina and A&M because the Heels are, again, in a major bowl for the first time since 1950, have never been in the Orange Bowl. A&M thought they should be in the playoff. So you got Jimbo Fisher, who, by the way, when Jimbo Fisher was at Florida State, he never defeated North Carolina. It was the only school in the ACC Jimbo Fisher did not beat as the head coach at Florida State. It was North Carolina. So now he gets a shot. Mack, again, has been excellent in bowls. He's 8-2 in his last 10. But you're right. Of all those games, I'm going to take out the college football playoff. The Miami one, the Miami-Oklahoma State game, to me, is the most interesting one because of this. Number one, the last time we saw the Canes, they were awful. Let's be honest. They got obliterated by the Heels. Gave up 62 and looked like, hey, we got these really cool black unis, which I hope they burned. They got to play better. Number two, they got shut out in a bowl game last year, Wes. You remember doing that game?
Yes.
Remember how bad that was? That was a zero to La Tech. Number three, the momentum that was gained this year by Manny Diaz in Miami. They gave some of that away in the North Carolina game. I want to see some passion and some energy in their game against Oklahoma State. Now, Phillips and Roche, they're great defensive ends, have already said, hey, catch it, we're going to the NFL. So that's going to be an issue. But I want to see the want to from Miami in that game. You know what? No, you didn't make it to the ACC title game. No, you didn't make it to the Orange Bowl. You're going to a lesser game, all right? You are. So I want to see the culture that has been developed by Manny Diaz at Miami in this game. And I will also point out, because I was just curious when all this came out yesterday, I looked it up. Miami has lost 9 of their last 10 bowl games. You want to get back to elite status? You want to get back to answering the question, is the U back? These are the kind of games that you've got to have the want to show up and take care of business and not give me the North Carolina effort, which was ole, ole, ole. So Miami, to me, is the most interesting of the four non-college football playoff games going on. No knock on North Carolina going to the Orange Bowl. That's great and all that stuff. NC State's playing well against Kentucky. I get all that. But I want to see Miami give me an A effort in the Cheez-It Bowl.
Did Roche and Phillips opt out of the bowl game?
They've declared for the NFL. I don't know if they're – I'm going to assume that that's probably not a good sign that they're going to play in the bowl. I hope they do. But if they don't, it's the world that we live in now. So with or without them, Wes, I want to see Miami come to play unlike whatever I saw the last time I saw them play, and that is guys just running through them like, you know, no big deal.
Yeah. So word is they're not going to play the game.
I would assume that.
Yeah, likewise. All right, so does that mean we expect some sort of De'Eriq King declaration prior to December 29th?
I don't know. I have no earthly idea.
I don't either. Yeah.
All I know
I just
is...
think this is the timing on this gets pretty interesting. We talked about this a year ago, right? The timing on some of the opt-outs or the guys who bypass the bowl, and look, we get it. I mean, it's kind of where we are in the landscape of these games now. But I think it's interesting, the timing on this, because in King's case, and we talked about this last week with Tom Luganville, this is where this could get tricky, right? I mean, because you're talking about, you know, a guy who may or may not come back and all those type things. So you maybe get a preview of 21 as much as you get a celebration of 20 in the case of Miami. But nonetheless, I think your point is well stated. Miami needs to show you something here, because you went from 19 to 20 with the great unknown, right? Oh, you're going to have new coordinators. You're going to have new – oh, by the way, here's De'Eriq King. Oh, by the way, here's Quincy Roche. Jalen Phillips off the deal. You don't want that mystery if you're Manny Diaz into 21, do you?
Right.
Not at all.
Listen, Miami's done a lot of really good things this year. But that North Carolina loss, you know, had you lost the game 31-28 and it was a competitive back and forth, that's one thing.
Yep.
But when you give up nearly 800 yards of total offense and you're going to come out there in those goofy black unis and give up a 62 spot in a game that really mattered, because if you win, you're in the Orange Bowl. You win the game, you're in the Orange Bowl. But now you're in the Cheez-It Bowl. And now you got your two defensive ends out. And what's the mindset? I want to know about the culture of that locker room and really how much advancement has Miami had. You come out and punch Oklahoma State in the nose, win that game looking impressive. Hey, you're off to the races. You lay an egg like you did a year ago and let Louisiana Tech put the zero on you, and you go and do another ole against Oklahoma State. All that goodwill, I mean, that's all momentum. That is all perception. Kind of like what we talk about with Notre Dame. Hey, you get in a big moment, you keep laying eggs, people just start putting dirt on you. Same thing with the U. I mean, these are two national brands that need to give me something the next time we see them play. That's Miami and Notre Dame.
Oh, you're right about that. You're exactly right. All right, when we come back, Power Hour on a Monday. Six-time ACC champion. Sounds like we're introducing a fighter, doesn't
it? Seven times.
Six time.
Six in a row.
Seven-time ACC champion. Six in a row. Seven-time ACC champion. Again, sounds like we're introducing a fighter.
I got news
coming out of the orange corner from Pelham, Alabama. Yes, sir?
He's got the belt. He may have it for a while. Just saying.
Yeah. So, coming out of Pelham, Alabama, William Christopher Dabo Swinney's on deck to start the Power Hour with Packer and Durham next on ACC.
Packer and Durham.